activity.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, if people are talking about not rebroadcasting things or because of sensitive issues, at the same time, lucky for us, it gets to be done artistically at the time this play was written. And again, it's relevant now for various different reasons. But that's in some ways why a play like this would need to be aired, because this way people can discuss it as if, what would we do if? And this way you can do it in a safe scenario of it being art and it not being a real life situation. And you can think it through, and perhaps then people have devices or, you know, plans that they work through for any specific reason, or maybe they bring that up to their politicians, or, you know, just get involved or more active, or just their thought processes about what could be. So in some ways, like, there's no appropriate time to do it. In some ways, like, any time is appropriate to do it, because if you can't work it out in an art scenario, then how would you work it out? So,
in a real scenario.
Right, but that's not the one we want to do it in.
No, exactly.
Right, so in some ways, like, this is the perfect time to do it, because this is when people should be thinking, because it's not happening, because it hasn't happened in the U.S. yet as far as having anything to do with nuclear power facilities and or ramifications from outside forces, although that has been a worry, especially since the last 5 years.
Well, I think what we focus on here with this play is fear and how people respond to a situation they're not expecting. I think that's something that certainly has been dwelled upon quite a bit in the last few years, is fear.
And, you know, if in this day and age is not the time to do this, if it's considered irresponsible in this day and age, when is it proper again? I mean, I'm reminded back to right after 9/11 when Rudy Giuliani was the guest on Saturday Night Live, and they're like, can we be funny now? And he goes, you know, well, why start being funny now? When can we once again be cutting edge? When can we once again do this kind of art? If not now, when? When's a good enough time?
Right, there will always be people saying that it's not appropriate.
It's like
my thing with criticizing Reagan. You can't criticize Reagan. He's the president. You can't criticize Reagan. He's an old guy. You can't criticize Reagan. He's dead. When can you criticize Reagan?
My grandmother said the same thing. She's like, you can't criticize me. He's the president. And my answer back is, if that's your attitude, then you would not have... then you're un-American, because back in the American Revolutionary War, you would have been like, we can't criticize the king, he's the king. And you never would have separated from England. If you can't criticize your leaders, there's nothing more un-American than that, because if you didn't criticize your leaders, there would be no America. America came about because somebody criticized England, the leaders.
I'm sensing anger out in our listening area, because people want to hear how the play continues and ends. And we're going into blues time now. The blues show will be starting late tonight. It usually starts at this time, so... stay with the radio play and you'll be hearing blues before you know it. This is WUSB Stony Brook, by the way, and we are in the middle of a pledge drive, and we are asking, pleading, begging for your phone calls, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And we have the Shadow of a Long Island double CD set. We have WUSB T-shirts. We have all sorts of other things, coffee mugs and tote bags and hats and God knows what else. 631-632-9872 is the number. Please show your support for non-commercial creative radio. Ask yourself if you can tune to the dial anywhere else, no matter where you happen to be listening to us from, and get this kind of material. Somehow, I think you'd be hard-pressed. All right, so we're going to go back to the play, and hopefully those phones will start ringing as soon as we do that. 631-632-9872. We're going to go to the part now where we actually get very local, and we're talking about what's happening here on campus in response to the nuclear emergency, which is not actually happening. It's part of a Halloween rebroadcast of a radio play from 1985, Shadow Over Long Island, which resumes now.
So far, from what we can tell, relatively few people are aware that there even has been an accident. And of these, only a handful seem to be visibly alarmed. Now, we have yet... Could you please take that talking outside? Thank you. We've yet to hear anything official from the university administration on such things as whether students should be evacuating the campus or possibly seeking shelter in one of the air raid shelters that exist here. We need to hear something official, and hopefully we will soon. Hi, Bob, do you have something for us?
Sorry, Glenn, I really don't have anything official yet, but it may be of interest to know that several hundred Stony Brook students are currently inside the Stony Brook tunnel system. Which, for those of you who don't know, it's a fairly elaborate maze of underground passageways that is used for maintenance purposes. And what's interesting in this is that from the reports I've heard, the campus police are doing nothing to prevent them from entering the tunnels. And usually, if they go into the tunnels, they stand a fairly good chance of being caught and charged with trespassing.
But they're not going after the people right now.
No, and I do think this is significant, Glenn, because the campus police get their orders from a higher authority, and it would appear that they're telling them to let the students go into the tunnels.
But, of course, that's different from actually encouraging people to go down into the tunnels. It may simply be a tactic to avoid panic.
Yes, that is very possible. But it's important for all of us to know whether there is any possibility that the campus is in danger. We really need to know this as quickly as possible.
Well, thank you, Bob. The Stony Brook campus is, of course, the only college campus with dormitories that's fairly close to the nuclear plant. It's about 13 miles away. There are about 8,000 students who live here. What do you have, Jack?
Here are some statistics. The nuclear power station is situated on the north coast of Long Island, facing Long Island Sound. Roughly half of the nominal 10-mile plume, EPZ, extends to the north into the open water of Long Island Sound.
Toward Connecticut, then.
Correct. The 1985 projected population of the south half of the EPZ is 138,500 in winter and 160,000 in summer. The population is not evenly distributed throughout the south half of the EPZ, but is more concentrated in the west and southwesterly portions than in the easterly portions. Prevailing winds are toward the offshore northerly direction over 30% of the time, and toward the easterly direction 35% of the time. Topography on Long Island and within the EPZ is generally flat, with hills and bluffs along the north shore. The Long Island Expressway, the LIE,
I know what those letters
which has three lanes, plus shoulder in both directions, passes through the EPZ in an east-west direction. Several other east-west roads with smaller traffic capacity pass through the EPZ.
Well, that brings us to another aspect of this whole thing, the winds. Now, right now, they are, true to the odds, blowing in a northeasterly direction. But the forecast I read a little while ago is calling for those winds to shift and possibly increase in velocity. Now, if there is airborne contamination, the wind direction will determine what areas are hit the hardest. Geez, this is really getting scary. Could you tell us any more about the winds from that booklet?
They're very important, Glenn. The winds have the power of making the 10-mile plume totally meaningless. If, say, the winds shift and start heading in our direction, the Stony Brook campus would easily be part of the plume.
That's correct, Glenn. You know, that was one of the reasons the county was pushing for the 20-mile evacuation zone, although we at the Coalition felt even that wasn't enough.
In case you're curious about how fast you're supposed to be going in a nuclear evacuation, or how many other people are doing what you're doing, the folks running the plant have some more statistics. Here, let me see. Total trips required, according to them, 52,548. Vehicle miles, 303,928. Projected 1985 EPZ population in summer, 159,959. Average speed of vehicles during congested flow, 6.8 miles per hour. Average trip length, 5.8 miles. And the calculated time to evacuate a EPZ, and that includes mobilization time, 4 hours, 55 minutes. Now, Suffolk alleges that the mobilization time used in the estimates, the power company estimates, the mobilization time is too short because it does not allow for time to become aware of the emergency. The time needed to reunite families, time to gather provisions before evacuating, and travel within the EPZ during the mobilization period. Work to home, home to school, and so forth. What are your impressions, Jack?
Of those statistics?
Yeah.
Well, naturally, they're barring unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah.
And in this kind of a thing, they're always unforeseen circumstances.
We have this report just in from the Wire. It says emergency workers are reporting in sick from all over the county. In addition, of those reporting for duty, many are reporting to the wrong evacuation stations. The telephone lines remain tied up at the stations. At a Shoreham Waiting River station, as many as half the workers are absent. And in a Riverdale, that says Riverdale, I'm sure they mean Riverhead. Our wire service has never been all that familiar with Long Island. In a Riverhead station, 11 workers signed in and then left, presumably to help evacuate their own families. In general, the way it appears to me anyway, the emergency stations have lost any effectiveness they had.
You know, that seems to be consistent with what interveners had said would happen. Agreements entered into between the utility and private ambulance companies, even though the workers would have been compensated, were really just wishful thinking at best. I mean, look what's happening here.
And here's something else that just came over our teletype. A number of witnesses have reported that some members of the public are refusing to obey the civilian traffic guides. A number of incidents have arisen between drivers of vehicles and the guides. Shoving scenes have been reported all along the evacuation route.
You know, I think a majority of the people see the guides as being stooges of the utility.
Well, as well as not being qualified to do the job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You see, there are these three components or characteristics that the public sees as being important, and what is out there now just doesn't cut it. They are, if I recall, selection by a merit-oriented system which included a probationary period, experience in the field, and believe me, they don't have that, and the regular feedback and self-correction stated plainly they're just not cops.
It's almost as if we have average citizens running the show, directing the whole evacuation.
It really does appear that way, doesn't it, Glenn? Apart from their lack of qualifications, their uniforms are merely sweatshirts with a monogram on them that say, emergency guide. You know, I've seen more impressive uniforms on people running anti-nuke rallies.
We have Robert Corning, Vice President for University Health and Safety, on the phone. Mr. Corning, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, there are quite a few questions being asked right now regarding the safety of people on campus. Is it safe to remain on campus during this crisis?
Well, of course it's safe. I don't think you're doing anyone a service by implying that it's not. We're not in any...
Mr. Corning, we're trying to find out the facts.
I realize that, and in the interim, while you're still finding out those facts, you would be wise not to over-speculate on a topic you really don't know that much about.
Well, I'm sorry if we're causing a stir, sir, but this is no longer a hypothetical situation. There has definitely been an accident at a nuclear power plant nearby, and whether or not you wish to believe this, it's up to you. They're definitely evacuating people at this very moment. We are forced to speculate, and we will continue to speculate, and everybody on Long Island is going to be speculating. Mr. Corning, the issue is, should we be evacuating the campus? And if not, then why not? If only 3 miles away, people are being told to leave.
The campus is safe. The 10-mile zone that is currently being evacuated is a worst-case scenario. In the worst possible type of an accident, there would not be a need to evacuate any further than 10 miles. And from what I understand, this is not an accident of that proportion.
All right. You say it's a 10-mile zone. A year or two ago, the county was saying a 20-mile zone was necessary. Doesn't that make you just a little uneasy that there's this lack of consensus?
The fact remains that the people who believe the evacuation zone should be 20 miles were not the ones involved in the plant. County officials may have the best of intentions, but as far as actually knowing what is safe and what isn't, I'm afraid they can't be considered authorities.
Whereas the people running this power plant right now are completely trustworthy.
I would like to believe that, yes.
Okay, well, thanks for filling us in, Mr. Corning.
Okay, thank you.
Robert Corning, Vice President for University Health and Safety, who believes that it's safe to stay on campus, and that everything's going to somehow work out nicely.
Now, concerning accidents. Quote, the parties dispute how many vehicle accidents are likely to occur during evacuation. The power company predicts 4 accidents based on data drawn from the Transportation and Traffic Engineering Handbook, while Suffolk County predicts 141 accidents
based on interpretation of the same source.
I love these statistics. We're already well above four.
Evacuation, and I'm quoting again, from Hurricane Carla.
Hurricane Carla, huh?
In eastern Texas involved 300,000 persons evacuating a two-county area during a period of 6 hours. Two traffic accidents, neither of which caused injury or death, occurred.
Well, you know, Jack, I guess that fear of radioactive contamination would incite a bit more panic than that of a natural disaster.
The plan also does not provide for the evacuation of persons whose cars become inoperable because of breakdowns or accidents. Such planning is not required. People whose automobiles become disabled will undoubtedly be offered rides by fellow evacuees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In addition, people could catch a ride on one of the numerous buses transporting people from the EPZ, or could ride with a road crew.
Of course.
Suffolk County asserts that evacuees will not pick up stranded people and that buses do not travel all routes where people might be stranded.
Uh-huh. Well, Jack, I don't think it's unlikely that stranded people will get rides, but I'm kind of uncomfortable seeing emergency plans that count on stranded people getting rides. The more you read from this thing, the less I'm convinced they're talking about an emergency at all. They almost seem to be trying to convince us that chaos, in the true sense of the word, isn't possible. We've just got word from Jim out in Rocky Point. There's a report of a shooting. It's taking place, from what we understand. We don't know anything more at this point. A shooting. We expect to hear from Jim very soon, and we'll get whatever details we can.
Okay, the power company has agreements with ambulance companies for a total of 63 ambulances and 130 ambulettes that would be used during an evacuation of the 10-mile EPZ at the plant. There are three hospitals in the vicinity of the plant, two just inside the EPZ boundary and one just outside it. All are over 9 miles from the plant. The utility does not plan for evacuation of the three hospitals at the same time as the rest of the EPZ, even assuming an evacuation of the entire EPZ. Instead, the power company recommends that hospitals shelter their patients as a first choice of protective action. If the hospitals themselves decide to evacuate, the power company will use ambulances and ambulettes under contract to assist. This would be done after these vehicles had first evacuated the homebound and the special facilities patients closer to the utility. Some ambulance companies operate from locations outside the EPZ. One company has its storage yard for ambulances in Long Island City, approximately 50 miles from the EPZ.
Ooh, very convenient. This just in, the railroad is adding extra trains on all westbound routes. According to a spokesperson, trains will be leaving every 20 minutes. And are you ready for this? All fares will be optional. It will not be mandatory to pay a fare if you're on a train heading west. This gives you an idea of the situation we're faced with. Free train rides. Actually, I believe they've offered similar programs on New Year's Eve when many people's lives could be saved by taking the train. Well, this could be the case here. As the roads get more and more clogged, tempers are flaring, it makes a whole lot more sense to take the train and stay off the highways. And I believe these folks are providing a true public service by offering free rides on the trains heading west. Now, if you don't have a car, taking a train is your best bet for getting out of the area, but you're still faced with the problem of getting to the train. Most of the towns within the 10-mile evacuation zone don't have local train service, so it's necessary to get to another town that does. Now, under this emergency plan, the county is supposed to provide bus service for the handicapped and elderly, and this hopefully will be starting soon, if it hasn't already. We're waiting to hear some official word on that, but we're waiting for a lot of things official at the moment. We do know, though, that the regular buses are either not operating at all or operating very sporadically. There's virtually no taxi service anywhere in Suffolk, as most taxi companies have too much to handle as it is. If the drivers have decided to stay at work, that is.
You're listening to a radio drama called Shadow Over Long Island. The events depicted are fictitious. There is no actual emergency taking place now. We now return to Shadow Over Long Island.
What's that? Hold on. All right. We have a little girl here that was found a little while ago by one of our staff members outside. She was crying and lost. Have we been able to get her name, Bob? Okay, bring her in here, would you? Hi. Will you tell the people on the radio your name?
Tara.
What's your name? Do you know your name?
Tara.
Tara. Okay, what's your last name? Do you know your last name? Hmm? Do you know what your last name is?
Tara.
All right, well, if someone out there has lost a little girl named Tara on the campus, don't worry. She's in good hands. Please come down if you want to pick her up. Don't call us, please, though. We have no open lines. Her name is Tara, and she looks around 4 to me. Blonde hair, blue eyes, wearing a pink dress with white frills. One of our engineers just got a call from the Coast Guard. They've been involved in the evacuation for almost 2 hours, according to Lieutenant Philip Kane. They had 2 boats dispatched from their stations, one at New Haven and the other at Eaton's Neck near Northport. And a preliminary report by one of the vessels indicates that a small boat has capsized in Long Island Sound, just 7 miles northeast of Shoreham. 2 dozen people, including women and children, have been rescued. No further information is available. Jack, I'd like to get your opinion on something. I've been looking at this book with the big plan, and I've been noticing what they say about selective evacuation.
Uh-huh.
Here it is. Selective sheltering or evacuation recommendations are recommendations that a selected portion of the population take these actions, the remainder of the population being advised to take other actions or to take no protective action. Selective actions may be recommended at doses below the EPA PAGs, here we go, and would normally be recommended only for radio-sensitive persons such as children and pregnant women. Such sheltering or evacuation would not be recommended without consultation with the New York State Commissioner of Health. I wonder where the commissioner is at the moment. Absent instructions from the state, the power company would recommend sheltering or evacuation for entire populations. Now, we haven't seen any selective evacuation. We're seeing a general evacuation today. The county is saying everyone within 10 miles get out. Now, there's one sentence I just read that really bothers me. Selective actions may be recommended at doses below the EPA PAGs. First of all, what does it mean? Do you take this as meaning the doses are particularly high in this incident?
No, I really don't know. If I had a dosimeter, I could find out. It certainly seems as if officials believe the dosage might get high enough to harm the general public. Whether it's there already is something the real experts have to tell us.
Suffolk County contends that a substantial number of people who might be advised to shelter will be unable to do so because many structures in the Shoreham Plume EPZ are constructed of wood and lack basements.
Right. The shielding factor for a wood frame house without a basement is 0.9. This means that the calculated dose savings for whole body exposure to radioactive gases is only 10%. And those who shelter in a wood structure without a basement will still receive 90% of the whole body dose they would have received had they remained outdoors. And Suffolk County, according to its information from this book, contends that homes in the EPZ, other than those built of wood, will only provide a 50% dose reduction and that this level of exposure will result in health-threatening doses.
Well, let's go back to Jim out in Rocky Point, who's got something out there to report.
Glenn, there's been a tragic development in this evacuation. A resident of Shoreham was evidently attempting to drive to his house in order to get to his family. He was driving against the flow of evacuation traffic. Apparently, when he got to his street, he found it blocked by the police who were attempting to channel traffic. And according to the police, the man was in a virtual state of hysteria and nearly drove through the barricades. The police managed to stop him and, ironically, were prepared to let him pass to get to his family. The man, however, must have thought that they were not going to let him pass, but he reached into the glove compartment and pulled out a gun. He began firing, and from what I've been able to tell, three police officers were hit, and one was fatally injured, and another was seriously injured.
Jim, what about the motorist?
Well, he drove off, and right now they're looking for him, but there's a lack of patrolmen available. The officers that were shot, in fact, had to be taken away in police cars. They just didn't feel an ambulance could get there in time. Right now they're looking for a blue Toyota Celica, and anyone in the neighborhood who spots this man should contact police immediately.
Okay, now, what neighborhood are you in now?
I'm sorry, I'm not in Rocky Point anymore. Not much traffic here, but I'm in Shoreham, just north of Route 25A.
This sounds like a real tragedy for everyone concerned.
No, you're absolutely right. I see policemen in tears, so I really don't know how to describe it. But one thing that is very important to point out, it might have helped prevent this incident. The police blocking off the roads are acting as traffic guards. They are not employed to prevent anyone from using the road of his or her choice. They are merely advising motorists on the best route to take. Once again, they will not prevent you from going down a road.
If only this had been made known to the public.
It would have saved at least one life here, Glenn.
My God. Thanks, Jim.
All right.
Keep us informed, will you? Okay, this just in, several motorists in Coram have been pulled out of their cars by pedestrians who then drove off in their cars. Police are on the scene trying to keep things calm, but there, of course, aren't enough officers available to keep the crowd under control. From what we've been told, traffic is at a near standstill on Route 25. Some pedestrians have apparently been mobbing certain cars. They've been, more than not, cars with just one person in them. The motorists have been thrown to the ground, and then people have been jumping into the car, driving away down the shoulder in these stolen vehicles. Some of the motorists claim to have been robbed of watches and jewelry in addition. Police are advising... We have some interference here. Police... Are we all right there in the control room? Police are advising... I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We've had some interruption to our signal. We have a backup generator now operating, and hopefully we're back on the air. Are we back? To continue, police are advising motorists passing through towns. This is crazy. What happened? Police are advising motorists passing through towns to keep their windows closed and their doors locked. Are we on the air? They also suggest not traveling alone, and if your car is being attacked, try to make noise by blowing your horn. Unfortunately, there just aren't enough police to keep this under control. Please, please, if you're out driving, keep on your toes.
This seems to be getting very crazy here, Glenn, and we are getting reports of continued looting in Patchogue and in Port Jefferson Station as well, with mobs of people in their teens and in their 20s smashing windows, making off with TV sets, furniture, computers, anything of value. And police are attempting to control the situation. They're getting help from volunteer firemen, but from what we've been told, they're having trouble doing both this and trying to coordinate the evacuation at the same time.
governor of New York is appealing for calm in the midst of the Long Island nuclear disaster. And I quote from the statement, "It is vital," says the governor, "that Long Islanders help each other and avoid acting in an irrational way. Please look out for the safety and well-being of your neighbors, drive in a responsible manner, and remain calm. Long Islanders are strong, and they will survive this crisis. You have the support of all of New York State." Those words were received in a brief message from the governor of New York State.
And you're listening to Shadow Over Long Island here on WUSB Stony Brook. There is no need to panic. You are listening to a rebroadcast of a radio play that aired back in 1985 about the possibility of a nuclear accident here on Long Island. If you'd like to pledge support to this radio station to keep things like this coming and also to get your personalized copy of Shadow Over Long Island on two compact discs, please give us a call at 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. A pledge of $50 will get you the CD set plus a WUSB T-shirt, and we have all sorts of other items as well. But the most important thing for you to do to show your support, to keep this radio station on the air and to keep creative programming coming your way, is to call and voice your support. Invest in non-commercial radio. 631-632-9872. And now the conclusion of Shadow Over Long Island.
Well, this isn't confirmed, Glenn, but some of our listeners have been telling us that in the wake of the shootings, the looting, robberies, the car and boat deaths, and other violent incidents, several police officers are abandoning their positions, both out of fear for their own safety and, I guess, out of disgust for the entire situation. We've had a few people tell us they've seen abandoned vehicles, police vehicles yet, and even a few that were being driven by teenagers.
Well, you know, Bob, when all is said and done in a situation like this, police people are fathers and mothers and husbands and wives and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters.
You know, I really don't blame them at all. On top of the possible radioactive poisoning, we're asking these people to risk their lives against rampaging mobs. You know, I think it's crazy for them to stay on the job in the face of any kind of danger like that.
What would you do? Well, folks, the wire services appear to be quite active now. It really took a surprising amount of time. Here's the latest report, and power company officials have confirmed that there has been an accident at a nuclear power facility on Long Island, situated on the north shore facing Long Island Sound. So far, it's been determined that there have been three separate problems, all in the reactor building. An automatic shutdown system has failed to commence shutdown, and a plume of radioactive particles has been released into the atmosphere. Bob, is Dr. Stepanovich here yet?
No, Glenn, he's not.
This other release is filled with meteorological data that hasn't been broken down. Dr. Isaac Stepanovich is a meteorologist, and he should be arriving at the station very shortly. To continue, selected sheltering and evacuation is now in progress at most areas of eastern Long Island, with both police and civilian authorities engaging in relocating an estimated 400,000 people. Scattered violence is being reported. Well, I'm afraid we know all this already. We've known it for quite some time. I'm sorry, folks. We seem to be more in touch than the wire services are. What do you have, Bob?
Well, one of our porters just got off the phone with the police, and we've got 13 confirmed automobile accidents that are directly connected to this evacuation. No fatalities so far, no serious injuries.
Jack, we seem to be seeing an awful lot of people outside the 10-mile zone evacuating the area. Is there any mention in the emergency plan on how to handle this?
Well, according to the plan, this isn't supposed to be a problem.
Oh, I see.
According to what I have here, the county has alleged that in an accident at the site, there would be a large number of people who would evacuate voluntarily, even if not ordered to do so. This is known as the evacuation shadow phenomenon.
It's known as instincts, what it is.
The county maintains that the power company has failed to take the shadow phenomenon into account. The power company, on the other hand, claims not to disagree with Suffolk County as to whether the evacuation shadow phenomenon will occur in some degree
in the event of a radiological emergency at the plant. The controversy centers on the likely magnitude and consequences of this phenomenon. In essence, Suffolk County believes that overreaction of Long Island residents in a radiological emergency would likely be very large, perhaps involving up to half the families on Long Island, even though an evacuation advisory would apply at most to the families living within the 10-mile radius of the plume emergency EPZ.
Overreaction, huh?
The utility argues that the overreaction will not be great because it can be limited or controlled by disseminating information to help people have accurate perceptions about an emergency that is taking place. That in any event, overreaction in moderate degree, although unnecessary, is not a threat to public health and safety.
Well, I'd like to ask the police if they think overreaction is a threat to safety. We've had one fatal shooting less than an hour after the evacuation announcement. Accidents all over the island. People stealing boats in Port Jefferson Harbor.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jack.
I think the mistake that the NRC made here was attempting to predict unpredictability. Predicting what people are going to do is as hard as predicting what the equipment inside that plant is going to do. When I worked there, we would have plans for every possible occurrence, every incident we could think of. Somehow, it always happened that something we never thought of was what really wound up happening.
Oh, all right, now, let's continue with that emergency plan.
The power company believes that public response can be effectively influenced during a radiological emergency by a public information system that disseminates accurate information according to several sociological principles, which they enumerate and discuss.
I'd like to be able to see some accurate information. Well, Jack, if this wasn't such a serious situation right now, I'd be tempted to laugh. We haven't seen any public information system worth speaking about other than this radio station. I heard talk of some kind of a hotline, but who can get through to that at a time like this?
I don't know. Like I said, there's just no way this can go according to plan.
Does it say in there how they came up with these ideas about how people would act?
Yeah, let me find it. Okay, here it is. The evacuation shadow phenomenon was observed by surveying persons who reside in the vicinity of Three Mile Island within about 1 month after the accident there. An analysis of information given to the public during the accident at TMI supports a conclusion that reasonable people would think at the time that the situation was dangerous. Messages at various times that there was radiation in the environment, that a hydrogen bubble might explode, that general evacuation was being considered, and that pregnant women and children under 5 years of age should evacuate a 5-mile radius around the plant were all sufficient for a reasonable person to reach a conclusion that a dangerous situation exists. There is no evidence that respondents said that their pre-existing fear of radiation was the principal reason for evacuating.
Yeah. Well, Jack, I'd like to know, does it really matter at this point whether the people are afraid of radiation or not? Obviously, just about everybody within 20 miles of that plant wants to get the hell out of here, whether that's because they fear radiation or violence or being the only people in the neighborhood left. The fact remains, they want out. I'd say a lot of people are afraid of radiation, but whether they are or not, we're still on the verge of panic.
I agree with you, Glenn. Inside the plant, I didn't see very much concern about the personal effects of radiation. But that doesn't keep people from going a little crazy when things go wrong. There's a lot of tension inside the plant, and now there's that same tension outside.
Oh, and one thing you just read really concerned me. In the 3 Mile Island accident, they advised pregnant women and children within 5 miles to evacuate. That's not the case here. They're telling everyone within 10 miles to clear out. Does this mean our accident is worse than 3 Mile Island?
Not necessarily.
No?
Not necessarily. It strikes me that the procedure may be a little different. We simply won't know how serious this is until the future.
All right, now, before any more people die for no good reason, can we put our finger on what the danger actually is here? What are we all running from?
There are three types of radiation dose which could result from plume exposure. A whole body dose from noble gases, a thyroid dose, and a whole body dose caused by deposit of radioactive particulates. Protective action guidelines call for sheltering if the projected shelter thyroid dose is less than 25 rem or equal to or greater than 25 rem, and the evacuation dose is equal to or greater than the shelter dose.
Now, how is the average person supposed to evaluate this dose?
It just goes on. Sheltering is also recommended where the projected shelter whole body dose is less than 5 rem or is equal to or greater than 5 rem, and the evacuation dose is equal to or greater than the whole shelter dose. According to experts, the threshold for early injuries is 30 rem. People who receive the 30 rem doses probably will not experience any acute effects, i.e., death or injuries occurring within 60 days after exposure. But their lifetime chances of developing cancer will increase by about 21%. The chance of developing cancer, other than skin cancer, in the general population is approximately 28%. Thus, a 30 rem dose would increase the risk to about 34%.
Now, Jack, you were telling me about the traffic guides that the power company itself has running around. Could you fill us in about these company guides?
Okay. The power company's traffic control plan is as follows. Its purpose is to minimize evacuation time by using special traffic control tactics to limit many potential bottlenecks in evacuating traffic by using up to 138 traffic control posts manned by utility company traffic guides. The guides will facilitate traffic flow and will attempt to ensure compliance with routes specified in the plan to the extent possible.
That's quite a phrase right there, to the extent possible.
If the traffic control plan works as expected, then evacuation of the ETC can be accomplished in about four hours, 55 minutes.
Well, this is all wonderful, these hours and minutes. I think we're all wondering what's going to happen in the very next few minutes, not 8 hours from now. Now, these predictions are very interesting, if nothing else.
It also says, Power Authority traffic guides will deploy traffic cones in the roadways.
Oh, that'll help.
And will use hand and arm signals to facilitate traffic flow. They will use these means to discourage traffic entry into the EPZ and to discourage traffic flow in non-prescribed directions. They will not screen traffic. No one will be denied the opportunity to travel in a non-prescribed direction if they choose. The board finds that the planned function of the traffic guides is to facilitate voluntary compliance with the evacuation plan and to facilitate traffic flow through traffic bottlenecks that will develop in an evacuation.
That have developed.
The guides are not instructed to exercise any authority to force evacuees to take any action against their will.
Well, that's an extremely important point, Jack. Already, we've seen one person killed today because this was not known. Traffic guides will let anyone go wherever he or she wants, but these guides will advise people on the roads which ones are better to take.
Now, the incident before didn't involve a power company traffic guide, but rather a member of the police department. From my understanding, the police are not forcing anyone away from a particular area, at least not yet.
Okay, Jack, why don't you continue with what you have there?
Okay, most motorists will follow traffic guides' directions that are contrary to traffic signals. There are no data that would support a hypothesis of extreme confusion on the part of significant numbers of drivers in this situation. To the extent that traffic guides would be disregarded, however, the overall evacuation time would tend toward the estimate for the uncontrolled scenario, which is about 6 hours, 30 minutes, instead of 5 hours.
Here we go again.
Driver aggressiveness toward traffic guides would have a small impact on evacuation time estimates. Traffic guides will permit aggressive drivers to take any route they prefer if drivers insist, and therefore a possible cause of aggression will be absent.
Well, I'm glad that's all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's still going to be misunderstandings, mostly because a lot of people don't know these facts. Even I didn't understand a lot of them, and I heard you go through them right in front of me. And if a driver, if driver aggressiveness does have a small impact on evacuation times, it could still cost a few lives. It's already cost one life today that we know of. What's that? Make that two lives. I've just gotten a bullet in the other policeman who was shot out in Shoreham has died. Folks, we've just learned from the National Weather Service that the winds have shifted. Now, they're blowing in an easterly direction at 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 40. And we're expecting winds to increase during the night. However, the winds could shift again in direction. Now, does this mean that the plume is going to spread over a wider area of land? With an unpredictable wind situation, as we unfortunately seem to have now, it's practically impossible to say who's in danger and who isn't.
You know, Glenn, with all due respect, I really do think you're understating things. The fact is that the campus is now in very definite danger. With those winds heading in this direction, at that speed, the radioactive plume is no longer theory, it's reality. This is similar to the nuclear testing they did in the 1950s. I believe it was in Nevada where the wind shifted and a radioactive plume started heading towards a town. As is the case here, the people were misinformed. They were told to stay indoors and close their windows and everything would be just fine. That's in effect what we're doing when we say things are safe outside the 10-mile zone. Well, they're not. Radiation doesn't just stop at 10 miles. It keeps going and no one is really sure how it works.
There you go. That's the point that's always gotten to me. Nobody knows how it works. Some people know an awful lot, but no one knows everything about how radiation works. Wouldn't you think that that in itself would be enough to stop nuclear plants from being built? The only evacuation plan there should be is a plan not to have an evacuation.
You know, it's too bad we don't live in an ideal world where a question like that could be taken seriously. You know, we don't. You know, look back in history. Look over all of the wars and the Holocaust that have taken place over time. Look at the senseless waste of...
Thank you.
You've been listening to the radio play, Shadow Over Long Island. The performers were Rod Ross as Glenn, Ernest Rosenfelder as Jack, Bob was played by Buddy Kelly, Mike Girardo as Dave, and Frank Bergert as Jim. Along with them were Dave Looney, Marianne Devine, Dave King, Doug Delmar, Tish Koch, Doug Bell, Rich Koch, Ron Stanchfield, Jerry Reamer, Chris Sitari, Brian and Betsy Dinger, Arnie Pritchett, Greg Seminac, Paul Pecorino, Joe Evangelista, and Ed Bridges. Shadow Over Long Island was written by Eric Corley with assistance from Rod Ross, Ron Stanchfield, and John Vernial, from a concept by Ron Stanchfield, Eric Corley, and John Vernial. It was directed by Don Kenyon, produced by Eric Corley, technical direction and mastering by Frank Bergert, and Dave Ruderman was responsible for continuity. Post-production by Don Kenyon, and the executive producer was John Vernial. Special thanks to Harry Minot and WPKN in Bridgeport, Felicia Phillips, Steve Miller, Upper Hand, and John Rosenfelder. The program's content is the creation of the producers and does not necessarily reflect the views of WUSB or its licensee. If you have any comments about the program, please write us at WUSB, SUNY, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. This is John Vernial. Thanks for listening.
And it's 7:51 p.m. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. I'd like to thank Emmanuel Goldstein for resurrecting this radio drama from 21 years ago. And want to mention again that this is Fall Radiothon, and there is a special premium for associated with this particular presentation. For $50, you can get an autographed 2-CD set, recording of this broadcast without all the pitching. In addition, a WUSB t-shirt. So give us a call now at 1-800-394-WUSB or 632-6901. And we have a bank of volunteers in the next room waiting for your call. Lots of other premiums, CDs, sweatshirts, t-shirts, tote bags, hats, mugs,